Welcome to Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between, the podcast from Bespoke Family. I'm Bex.
And I'm Claire. Thanks for joining us as we tackle the ups and downs of life with children, helping you to get the best out of your time together. No rules, no judgment, just guidance. So grab a cuppa and let's get started with today's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between. And today we're going to be talking all about fussy eating, or you could call it picky or choosy eating, depending on how you want to refer to it. Because some people don't like fussy eating, because why don't they like it? I suppose it's because it sounds a bit like you're making a choice rather than it being something that you just really just don't like something, and so you can't eat it. Do you think that's why?
Ask yourself a question, answer the question.
I'll ask you the question. Is that why?
I think fussy has probably got quite a negative term around it. When you're fussy, it indicates that the child is making a choice to be fussy and turn down food for whatever reason. Whereas sometimes it isn't down to being fussy, it's down to being kind of choosy or picky about what's, you know, and again, it comes down to what their age is and all of those sorts of things, which we'll explore in a bit more detail. But I think fussy eating is the term that most people would refer to, and especially if you're the person trying to feed a child who is refusing or not wanting the food that you're producing, you would definitely probably say they're being really fussy at the moment, or they're going through a fussy stage. So I think that is probably where it comes from, why it's the most well-known kind of way of referring to it.
Because when children are babies, and I'm talking kind of very generically across the board here, you kind of tend to find that once you've got over the horrible funny face phase of babies kind of getting used to different textures and flavours and that kind of thing. Well, I mean, in my experience anyway, babies seem to tend to try most things. You kind of got, and then they seem to kind of, you'd give them something and, it wouldn't be a massive issue. But then as they got a little bit older, it seemed like to me that they got a little bit fussier. But is that the case? I mean, it seems like there is a certain age at which they start to become a little bit more fussy, or is it dependent?
There's a definite part, which is the kind of neophobic stage, which we'll talk about. And when you talk about babies, I do think it is dependent on the babies. You may have a baby who is potentially more sensitive to things like textures, certain flavours. It's like all of us though, isn't it? Some of us have a really wide developed palate. Some of us just don't. It's just, it can depend on how much they are still, taking of milk. It can depend on, like I said, the texture. So some babies just don't like certain textures of certain things. And that's kind of okay. They need to learn that. I always find it so interesting. Babies have gone 6 months with just having milk, and then suddenly we get to a point where we're like, right, here you go. Here's something new, and it's going in, and it's not like liquid. We can give it to them to hold in their hand, all those sorts of things. And they've got to adjust to that, and it is quite different. And suddenly they've got different tastes going on for them. So on the whole, most babies, do probably most things that are given to them. They will try them and those sorts of things. And then we get to kind of that 18-month age group. Now, this is kind of generic in that it could be a bit earlier, it could be a bit later. It's typically known as the neophobic stage. And basically it comes back to, or comes from, those thousands of years ago when we would go out and forage And we'd be in a cave and our little ones would go out with us. And up until probably about the age of 18 months, they would be strapped to us. They'd be carried and those sorts of things. So they were safe. Once they get to kind of the walking age, they had more freedom to be able to get to things. And so they could maybe find those berries. They could find those different things to try. And what's in there is their sense of, I need to be careful because I don't know if this food is safe. That is still in us today. And for some children, it is stronger than others.
Mm.
But our children will very often get to this age, and it's when they're starting to really develop and they're walking and talking, or just, you know, being mobile, even if they're not walking. And so what you often find is they will be more likely to want to eat off of your plate and eat your food off your spoon than they're going to want to if they're sat in a high chair and this food is just put in front of them. And it is basically them going, I don't know if it's safe. Ultimately, if I can see my adults eating off of that spoon and they're not dying, it's safe food. So I want to eat that. I need to eat. And we would have very much sat with our children. We would have eaten something, given it to them. It would have been very share-like kind of meal. It wouldn't be like we have today where we sit at a table. Sometimes we don't eat with our children because of timings and things like that. So suddenly this plate gets put in front of our kind of toddler and they go, no, I'm not trying that. And you know, lots of people always say that they'll eat beige food and they'll eat that kind of, they'll always be quite happy with things like bread and, you know, chicken nuggets, anything like that, fish fingers, anything that's just plain beige. And it's going to be anything with really high colour. So red, green. If you think berries out in the wild, going to be very often going to be red. Now, is it red for danger? So you might have a child who quite happily ate tomatoes, loved them. And then suddenly it's like, no, that's not going anywhere near me. Green, you don't know. So it might be that, you know, very often green things, they will still try. So things, broccoli, cucumber, things like that. For some children, they will still, because typically relates to kind of plants as such. And on the whole, they are relatively safe. But beige will always be a kind of key colour that they will go to, because it's going to feel safer to them than anything else. And so they often at this age, and like I said, some children will go through this phase and they might narrow it down slightly. They might go off something for a little bit. They might not. And others will really narrow down their choices and you will have a really tricky time where they will only probably eat two or three things. And they just request it over and over again. And I think this is why it really kind of triggers us, because we very often have a baby who's eaten and been, you know, you could give them anything and they'd eat it. And then all of a sudden you're confronted with a little one who just won't try anything. And the diet isn't very balanced and things like that. And that's when we can often start to panic. And that's when the problems can often increase because we've panicked. And so then food can sometimes become a bit of a battle.
It's not incredible that the history, the origin of, you know, like you say, thousands and thousands of years ago can still impact so heavily on how we develop today. I mean, that, like, you just can't even believe that that's the case, because, you know, you say about the red and the green and the colours and the fact that children eat off their parents' plates because it's more safe. I mean, that's like, wow.
Amazing.
Like, I can't, so I'm cool. Actually blown away by that. That's amazing. And just that, I mean, I suppose it's the same as that fight, flight, freeze, which, I mean, honestly, if I hear the reference to fight, flight, freeze and running away from tigers on one more podcast, I literally will, like, honestly, it appears like every single podcast is talking about that at the moment. But it's the same kind of It's coming from the same kind of...
But it is. And if you think, again, it could be this, it's the same thing for our children when they're eating. If they don't know what it is and they don't know it's safe, they're going to go into their kind of fight, flight, freeze. They're going to go, either they don't eat it at all, either they push it away and demand something else, or they're just going to be like, I'm not having it.
Clamp their mouth shut.
Yeah. Mm. And we still have these such huge feelings. Like, we all know when we're put under pressure that we can go into that kind of fight, flight, freeze. And so for our children to, and I always love seeing when this stage kicks in, because up until this point, everyone's quite happy. And then suddenly this child will only eat off your plate.
Mm.
And ideally off of your fork,
yeah,
out of your hands, anything, because you're putting it into your mouth. And I have to say, that is where eating with your child, where you can, is such a key aspect to getting through this phase. Even if you are, you know, things like just putting a few things like peppers, carrots, sticks, whatever it might be, again, age dependent. If you have that on the table and you share it, it is going to be so much more likely your child will try it, because you're both eating off the same plate.
Mm-hmm.
And very often you hear kind of people going, that's yours, this is mine. So you eat off yours. Do you know what? For a little bit, if you want to make sure, does it matter? I used to sometimes plate up my food. I'd put a tiny bit on the child's plate and they'd be like, no. I'd be like, do you want some of mine? Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to have to take it off my plate and put it on yours. Okay. Okay. And I'd planned that I was going to do that. Yeah, and as soon as you did it, okay, I'll eat it now. It's exactly what I'd plated up.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't have made any difference. But just simply going, do you want mine? Yeah. Okay. Here you go.
Because you do hear parents, don't you, say, oh, yes, my child eats everything. And then all of a sudden it's like, vroomph. You know, it's just, and then they're like, well, all they do is just want mine. All they want is mine. But then that can be quite a cute stage. But then...
If you don't eat with your child, because of work and because of all of those sorts of things,
you don't get to see it, do you? You don't get to see.
And what you actually end up doing is going, that's your tea, that's your dinner, your tea, whatever.
You're not
your
eating
lunch.
It.
You need to eat it, and they're going, I'm not eating it.
No,
because, and that is where things like sharing plates. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not having a main meal with them, if you can have some of the stuff that you're giving them and eating it, it just reassures them that it's okay. Mm-hmm. Sitting with them whilst they eat. But also it is those things of, if you are all eating together, and the washing up and everything else is a bit of a pain, but self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's serving from the same bowl. So, you know, rather than putting everything on plates, it's like, okay, learning to put stuff on their own plate. That also helps with portion control.
Mm.
Because, and them being able to work out, am I hungry? Have I had enough? Do I need some more? But having that ownership around food. Because again, when you get to fussy, choosy eaters, an element of control is taken out for them when we just plate it up. And so when they start to learn that, and we want them to learn what it feels like to be full, what does it feel like to put your own, you know, portion control. If they put a load of peas on, okay, well, I'm going to have to eat that now. I've put it on my plate. Next time I know to not put so much. And I think we underestimate children a lot. We used to do self-serving at nursery and everyone would be like, oh no. It's going to be a nightmare, because years ago we just used to plate it and this is what, and then we brought in, just before children, like in that year before going to school, we brought in self-serving, and then we started to bring it into the younger ones. They're like, no. And it's like, it's amazing how children will learn. Okay, that's too much. That feels too heavy on my spoon. I know that's going to be too much for me to eat. Or I like this. I don't like this so much, but I've got to have both. So I might have a bit more of the thing I like, but not so much of... And all of those things are skills for life.
Mm.
And so, but also gives them some control, gives them an element of being part of that mealtime. And they are key parts. And not panicking at the point where your child potentially comes fussy. Because what we can then do is like, but you've always eaten this. Why don't you want to eat it anymore? What if I do it like this? What if I do it like that? What if, do you want it on this plate? Do you
let's
want it
make
on that
it
plate?
Into
want
a hedgehog.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's do. And the child's like, hold on. Why are we suddenly like having big old conversations about this? And why do you look really nervous when you put a plate in front of me? That is not going to help that fight, flight, freeze.
No.
Response, because what that's going to do is go, why are you reacting like this? What's making that reaction? And then I'm going to become wary of why you want me to eat it. What's wrong with it? What's it going to do? That sort of thing. And so we just need to be, and then we start to offer, you know, alternatives. And then it's, do you want it this way? Do you want it that way? Do you want it on a pink plate, green plate, blue plate? Do you want me to, you know, do a dance for you? Whatever it might be. And suddenly mealtime changes.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly mealtime becomes a little bit more like, what's going on? And that's what you want to avoid. We always try not to offer an alternative. Unless you've given them something they really don't like. But otherwise, it's kind of, this is what we're having. There are, you know, you can try it, you see how you go, and then move on. And if there are things that they flatly refuse, so it might be broccoli, for example, you still cook it and you still put it on their plate. And you might put it on their plate every day for 6 months. And obviously don't do loads, just one little bit of broccoli. It sits there, they say they don't want it. Okay, no worries. But one day, there is that chance that that will come back in and they will just eat it.
That's happened to my friend.
Mm-hmm.
She, every day for, and I would say 6 months at least, she put two little green beans on the side of their plate, the two girls. She was like, every day she put them. I mean, they're like 26 and 30 now, you know, like, I mean, then. But every day those beans, and one day they ate them and they've never looked back. They love beans now. But I mean, you know, it's like, it is madness. I know. I was like, that's reoccurring, crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's that reoccurring message. It's, this is okay. There's no pressure for you to eat it.
Mm.
But these are fine. I've cooked them. They're all good. They're there for you to eat if you want to. The minute we put pressure on, just have a bite. Just try it. Just do this. Just do that. The minute you're going to get, no.
Do you know, it's funny. The other day I made... a pasta, Mary Berry pasta? I think it was Mary Berry. And it had sun-dried tomatoes, broccoli, and spinach in it. And mushrooms, I think, as well. It had quite a few veg in. Now, Ben doesn't eat vegetables. I mean, that is literally it. Anyway, he was out somewhere and I made it for him. And he came back and heated it up in the microwave and had it separately. And I said to Rich, he is not going to eat that. I will literally, he'll eat it and pick out all the little bit and it'll just be quite painful to watch. But I said to Rich, I'm saying nothing about the veg. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to let him eat it. He ate the lot, Claire. I said nothing. And he was like, this is delicious, Mum. You should make this again. And I was like, at the end,
vegetables in it.
Yeah, it was full of vegetables. But because I didn't make a fuss and it had a really nice sauce and, you know, and you couldn't really tell the vegetables were in there. I mean, you could
see
them.
Your children have been able to tell the vegetables before.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But they, you know, you could see them. They weren't cut up small or anything. I mean, you know, they were there.
You weren't hiding them.
No, I wasn't hiding them, which is another
thing. For your 19-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. But he ate it all. But like, it's like you say, you know, he enjoyed the taste. I didn't make a fuss about it. And I know he's 19, like, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. But it is a similar thing, isn't it? You start to make a fuss about stuff, and I would, you know, say to him, oh, I don't think you'll like it. He would have approached it completely differently and said, I don't like it. But now it's a little bit like, now I'm kind of on the let them theory type scenario. Yeah. Mel Robbins, let them. If you don't like it, you don't like it.
2025 Bex's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's slightly different to 19 years ago parenting Bex. But, because that would have been like, why haven't you eaten it?
I've hidden. You had that, didn't you? You had really good eaters. And then really good.
Terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you see, and then I was the hovering parent who completely messed that up. You know, I mean, I did do the whole kind of like, well, you know what I mean. I didn't mess it up. No, I know. But it isn't easy when you've prepared, like you said, you've prepared that meal, you've made a cottage pie and three vegetables and put it all on the, you know, you've self-set, you've done everything, and they still go, don't like it. And you're like,
yes, I do. You will like it. Just try it.
And I always laugh. I do, exactly, yeah. Five mouthfuls and you can have a yogurt. I mean, all that stuff, completely all wrong, you know. But I always laugh at that because Claire, to people who don't know, Claire has done quite a bit of nursery training for parents. So, and one of the topics you've done it on is fussy eating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Claire quite often shares a picture of Snape from Harry Potter, and Snape is sitting there grey faced, just looking and staring at the class. And that's what you say, isn't it? That's what some parents look like when they're staring at.
But my thing is, like, yeah, we do. We stand
the
there.
Children,
you hold
watching.
Your breath and you're like, come on, you're gonna eat this. You are gonna eat this. And then you're sat across the table from them. And when I do that training, it's always about, if you went to dinner with someone, just you and someone else, and you sat down and you're like, oh, I'm really looking forward to this. I'm hungry. You get the menu, start to look, and this person who you've gone with, so we'll call them a friend, and they go, oh, do you know what? I've actually already eaten. So you go ahead. And order. You eat. I'm just going to sit here. I'm just going to drink. If you are sat there eating when someone else isn't, and they are just looking at you, you are self-conscious. You are very aware of continually eating. You probably don't eat as much because you're like, I need to get this over with because I don't like this feeling. Because eating together is a very, that's what, again, if you want to go all the way back, we would have eaten together.
Yeah.
Everything would have been cooked at the same time. Everyone would eat together at certain times of the day. That's how, you know, that's how it worked. And so we are still in that food is very much a communal thing. It's not a, it's not a just, do, you know, eat on your own scenario. And so when we as adults sit there, not eating anything, but just staring our children out of like, eat, please just eat that. It's taken me ages. And the child's like, no, don't like it. Don't want it. There is just nothing. That
they're
can
basically saying,
that feeling.
Stop staring at me.
Yeah. And you do need to, like, again, it's all about that. How do you create that mealtime in your circumstance to the best of your ability to ensure that they feel that it is a mealtime? Like, it's not, you know, again, sitting there and being like, are you going to eat that broccoli? Why don't you eat the broccoli with that? Why don't you put it together? Because that will be better. Do you like it? Does it taste nice? Do you want any more? What are you going to eat? Do you want some more carrots? Should we have some more carrots? Let's put this.
Mummy spent a long time making that.
Yeah, I made that with love. And they're like, yeah, no, you didn't. You
don't
made
really
it with
care.
The ingredients. And I don't care. I don't have the
ingredient.
Like, I didn't. I'm not eating it. You know, I'm not doing. They're not doing it to upset us. They're just not. But this I find hilarious now because I'm now in a position where I am cooking for my parents because of various reasons. And Bex, you know, I've said this to you. So I'm now cooking very often for my mum and dad. And the other day, it is like karma. I'm like, great. So years, like when I was working much younger in my 20s, I'd leave work, come home, normally on my ring home to say I'm coming home. I'd always go, what's for tea? And I would, and my mum always had a thing that every week in the midweek, we'd have to have some form of like lamb chops or cottage pie or something like that with vegetables, because we had to have our vegetables. And I'd always ring up and I'd be like, oh, it's cottage pie. Oh, it's lamb chops. However, the tables have now turned. And I'm like, right, well, we have got to have some meat and vegetables tonight, because you two haven't had vegetables for a couple of days because of whatever reasons. And now
your dad is today, so funny.
It's hilarious. Literally today, I just said to them, what are we having for dinner? And I said, well, we'll need some vegetables to go with that. And Dad's like, do we have to? Yes, you do. Can so we not I've just sent them it? To go and get some vegetables for tea. And he's like, what have I got to get? And I'm like, you're 81 years old. You need to eat your vegetables. Honestly, I didn't eat a vegetable if I didn't have to in my 20s. And I used to get made to here. And now the tables have turned. I'm like, yeah, no, it's good for us to have vegetables. And you should be having that. And now I'm like, have you eaten your fruit? Have we had fruit? What fruit have you had? Dad's like, what's happened? I was like, I don't know. I don't know who I've become. But I am now the parent. And I cook things and I'm looking at them and I'm like, well, why haven't you eaten all of that?
Well, it's probably because your dad's saving it for the farm cat, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, he is. That is one of our biggest issues at the moment. But then it's like, well, why are you doing that with that? Like, just eat it. Don't mess around with it. No. I'm like, they're in their, you know, my mum's 77 and my dad's 81 and I'm sat there staring them out like, is it nice? Do you like it? Are you going
to
eat all that?
Perhaps we'll get them to listen to this podcast and say,
yes. And my mum, bless her, is, you know, quite honest and be like, that was okay. I'm like, okay. Just okay.
Yeah, so now you know exactly how these parents feel. Yeah.
And so it's just the way we are. When
we can't
there's something
help it.
Very emotive about food. And it's also really weird that I now look at my food, you know, like I said, I wouldn't have chosen to eat a vegetable. I wouldn't have chosen to eat like good food necessarily. Even in my 20s, I would have, you know, chosen salad over like having vegetables. I'm now at my age and I'm like, no, it'd be lovely to have some vegetables with that food. I'm like, where did that come from? Where's that? Like, when did I develop that need to be a grown-up?
It's weird, but isn't it?
It is weird, and I find it so interesting how your tastes can change over.
Well, I think the other thing is that we've got to remember that children's taste buds are so much more they're hypersensitive, aren't they, children's taste buds?
Well, they're sensory very early in their very early day, you know.
Whereas
that
most
driven.
Of ours, have, I mean, particularly like when you're 81, like, you know, a lot of their taste buds are dead, you know. I mean, it's like,
well, as we know, and we found out that basically your sweet taste buds come back in, like when you're a baby, your sweet taste buds become much more heightened as you get older.
Yeah.
That's why older people are very much drawn to sweet stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's not unlike our babies. And so there must be there's probably a reason behind that, and I haven't looked at it, but there must be something. I know that obviously babies have it because of like breast milk and things like that, because it's naturally quite sweet, but why it's in elderly,
but for children, you know, their taste buds are quite heightened, and so for something like, you know, something that you know, might taste, it potentially tastes very different to them. You know, I know that with Amy has got extremely strong taste buds, and I know it does, because sometimes her senses are strong. You know, she can smell, like, she can open the fridge and be like, oh, what's that awful smell? And I'd be like, it just smells of strawberries or something, because, you know, strawberries in the fridge sometimes you can really smell them. And she's like, oh, can't stand it. You know, she eats something and she's like, oh, that's really strong tasting. And that's the same sometimes with children. But they can all, just...
Everyone's all the different. Same. It's different. You know, again, it's about some people don't like things that are soggy foods. Mm. So I can't have gravy on my meal because I can't bear the food, the thought of food getting soggy. Like that.
And Rich is the same. He would have his gravy separate, the same.
Yep. It's I don't even have gravy. Like that is. No. But then we went out for lunch on Sunday and there's someone who I have never seen eat so much gravy or have so much gravy on their plate. And they're sat next to me. And I'm like, this couldn't be more opposite if we tried. But everything was like swimming in gravy. And I'm like,
yeah, I would ask for extra gravy. Yum, yum, yum.
How do you eat that? Like, eesh, yuck. But it doesn't mean everyone is different and our children will be different as well. Not all children love all things. No. And they might grow to like them over time. And they will, you know, what they eat as a toddler, they might not eat as a teen, but they then might eat as a 20-year-old. It really does kind of evolve as they get older.
The other thing about that age is that it is, in inverted commas, the terrible twos age, isn't it?
It's a tricky
stage. I mean, it is a tricky stage anyway. And so that kind of...
Well, they've got a real developing a sense of them.
Yeah.
And the sense of no.
Yeah.
So by saying no, they're like, whoa, look what happens when I say no.
This is amazing.
This is amazing. And that is when we kick into our big conversations, our big kind of like, okay, if I did this, would you eat it? If I offer you this, will you eat it? That's when we also get into our tricking stages. So we might be like helping to feed them. And then we might do a spoonful of yogurt, but then quickly stick in a spoonful of cottage pie. That is going to possibly ruin any work that you do because the trust goes. If you don't have trust in the person who's giving you the food, particularly if you are not trusting the food anyway, then you are going to pull back even more. And so it is, you know, really looking at how, you know, how do you manage it? You don't withhold things. And so it is, you know, often we don't want food to be about good foods and bad foods. We want them to be about what does the food do for us? What does it do for our body? How does it make us, you know, does it power our brain? Does it power our muscles? We want, you know, the minute we limit something, the minute we take some, you know, say you're only allowed, I don't know, chocolate if you eat this, you know, cabbage, whatever, then you start to get into a real challenge there because one, who'd want to eat cabbage if you again, personal choice. And I guarantee, I'm going to put this out there, I guarantee the veg that my dad has gone and bought for
is cabbage.
Is cabbage. He's got a real thing for it at the moment and I can't even complain because I'm like, I'm telling him he's got to eat veg. And so I'm now eating cabbage because I'm the one saying we need to eat veg.
It's a veg.
It's a veg and he likes it. And so I'm like, okay, let's do this. So again,
yeah,
it's karma. All those times when I whinged and moaned about
That's it.
Vegetables. So yeah, I think it's just... The other thing is involving children in preparing meals is a really valuable... Something just appearing, they don't necessarily build up the kind of, oh, this is going to taste nice. Mm. Or often when you're cooking, you might have a piece of carrot or you might have, you know, a green bean or whatever it is whilst you're cooking. Mm-hmm. And if they do that, great. It's becoming part of that. It's like, what, how does it, you know, how do you make this? How do you make that? What do you do? And if they know where their food comes from, and I would take it right back to even going and shopping for it. And I know lots of us now don't necessarily have the time. We have deliveries or we have things like the food boxes that come to, you know, do, which is all okay, but our children don't necessarily know where it's coming from. So it might be that one meal a week, you go to the supermarket and you buy the ingredients for it. Mm-hmm.
They help you unpack the boxes, or they help you put the shopping away. Yeah.
But having a little shopping list of being able to go and get their things.
Yeah. That is good.
The whole learning opportunity from being able to shopping is huge. And then it just knocks on to being able to then eat together and things like that. But making them fun, you know, for some children, even theming them. And yeah, so it's.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that you always said, another thing which I always, it's so weird, isn't it? There's things that you are like, I just can't believe that that would make a difference. But one thing that you always say, which again, you've got a parallel with being an adult, is that if your feet aren't solid, like on something, resting on something, and you're not sitting comfortably, you're not going to be able to eat. So you can maybe talk about that.
Or not eat potentially as much or as well.
As well,
or usual, your knife
sorry,
and fork
that's
and things
what
like
I meant.
That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the best ways of looking at it is when you go to those really funky places which have like the bar stalls. And you're like, they look so cool. And you go and sit at them. Your feet, you don't know where to put them. They're not flat. So they're sort of perched on the little bar that goes around the bottom of the stool. Doesn't typically have a back to it. So you're kind of trying to keep your posture. And then you try and eat at those things.
And then they quite often swivel a bit, don't they, as well? Yeah. You're a bit like, whoa.
Yep. And so to be able to eat comfortably and well, you need to really have your feet flat on the floor or on a surface, whatever that might be. So for our little ones, it might be like a stool, or it might be the high chair step. And I know lots of us, when they're in high chairs and they start to push themselves up in the high chair on that step, or they try to climb out and things like that, we take the step off because it stops all of that. What happens then is their legs dangle. And when your legs are dangling, your core is having to work so hard to keep you upright and feeling kind of secure. To then use a knife and fork, what you typically can find is for older children, if they're sat on a bench or a chair that's not supporting them properly, their elbows will go onto the table. And they will try and use their knife and fork because it's stability. So anytime you see them trying to use a knife, or they go up on their knees in the chair, again, it's just trying to find a point of stability in order to then be able to use a knife and a fork properly. And so ideally, our children need to be sat with their back supported. The bottom of the chair comes right to the back of their knees. Mm-hmm. So they're at a 90 degree angle. Their body is, you know, and their feet are flat on a surface. That is when their whole body is able to very much kind of be supported, and then the likelihood is they will be able to use a knife and fork more effectively, and then they are likely to eat for longer or more because they are fully supported. And I will challenge anyone, if they're sat on something that doesn't fully support them or not comfortable. I struggle with Wagamamas. Because they're all benches.
It is, yeah.
I find benches so uncomfortable anyway. But to sit there and have a meal and not have your back supported, that's the whole point that they have the benches. Because Wagamamas is not meant to be a long...
Yeah,
you're not meant to sit and just chill. So anywhere that has benches or swivelly, like high chairs that you can't really put your feet on, the likelihood is it's a quick in and out. Kind of place. They don't want you to stay long because they want the next person and the next person. So, and then I think another point just to go by is, whilst I talked about not tricking, it's also not, and talking about things like if you have the cabbage, you can eat the chocolate. It is also not always putting that kind of sweet and savoury, that you have to eat your savoury before you can eat your sweet. Because again, when we're talking about good foods and bad foods, that doesn't really work. We just want food to be seen as a positive. We don't want children growing up with negative thoughts around certain foods. Because 9 times out of 10, it just makes them crave them. As we all know. I have been brought up with the whole, you eat your savoury and you eat your, and then you get a pudding.
Like, I think most of us just, haven't we? And we're terrible, and restaurants aren't still we?
Yeah.
They do. And we, me and you are terrible in terms of the fact that we have something savoury, then we crave something sweet. And it's almost like innately in us that that's because we've always had it, both of us. That's what you got. And in fact, here now, we hardly ever have pudding here as a family. Mm. I mean, it's just, we just don't have it because we just didn't introduce it because when they were little, they did have the yogurt because that was like one of my bribes. But which obviously, and that isn't exactly what you've just said, isn't that it's not the ideal, is it? But you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Like you said, food is, have food whenever. Like Ben said to me the other day that they were at the airport. Did you hear him say that?
He said it, didn't he? Yeah.
They were at the airport, and there was no breakfast stuff to have, and he was like, "Oh, I'm just going to have that chicken burger." And Rich's like, "Having a chicken burger for breakfast? That's disgusting." And Ben's like, "What difference does it make? It's just food, isn't it?" And it was a chicken burger. Obviously, it's not ideal breakfast fodder or any fodder for any time. But it's true, isn't it? It is just food. And really, that is the point, isn't it? Like, you should shouldn't be saying to children, no, you can't have that for this time of day. It should be about eating what's good for you and what's good for your body. And like you said, talking about what fuels it and what you need and what's in it.
But if you just purely take like a hotel buffet breakfast.
Gosh, yeah, I know.
If you think about how all different nationalities approach food.
That's true.
And for us, you know, we might go to a buffet and be like, why would you have bread, ham, cheese for breakfast?
Yeah.
But then some nationalities be like, why would you have
a sugary cereal? Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you have that? Why would you? And then others would be, you know, we have pastries for breakfast. And then we have the full English. It's like there are such interesting concepts around food and what is right and what's wrong. And we are kind of conditioned as we grow up. And that whole having a main and then having a pudding is still so strong for us. Whereas any of the children I've ever worked for, we've just never introduced pudding. And it's so, that's just not a, they might have it if you go out for dinner. It might be that, you know, you have the occasional treat, but it's not an expected thing. So they don't look for it.
No, they don't even ask for it, do they?
No.
No.
But it does amaze me how that's still so strong.
Yeah.
I really struggle with that. And I'm sure it's because I've just been brought up with that.
Well, it's like when I go to the theatre, I can't go to the theatre without a box of chocolates. That's because that's what my dad always took, a box of chocolates. Yeah. And I'm a bit like, oh, where's the chocolates? It's terrible. But it is, it's just conditioning.
It is and it isn't. It's just, you know.
It's conditioning.
It is. And I think it's just being aware that we just want our children to enjoy food.
Building good and habits, really, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
So we have got a blog, or quite a few blogs actually, on fussy eating and different kind of aspects of that on the website. So we'll put some links to those in the show notes, and obviously do some other bits and pieces and tips and things during the week around this podcast. So we hope you found that helpful, and we'd love to hear any fussy eating hints and tips and stories that you've got, so please do share them with us if you have them, and share this podcast with anybody you think might be find it helpful. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.
That's everything for today. Thanks for listening. If there's something you'd like us to talk about, we'd love you to get in touch and let us know. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Bespoke Family, or head to our website. The links are in our show notes.
Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next episode, and please give us a rating or review if you like what you hear. We're Bex and Claire, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Newborn to Teen and everything in between. See you then.